name is Carol Collison, and I am a partner in Global Wine Partners. I'm the host of this podcast. I almost never say that, so I'm saying it now because I wanted to talk about a little thing that came up in this interview with Dave Dalzotto. Dave Dalzotto is an incredibly successful guy, second time around in the wine business previously, and he spools out his whole history of sales, direct-to-consumer sales in the infomercial space at a certain point in time, and then how that translated into his success in the wine business. He has four wineries, very DTC focused. The thing I wanted to point out is this. Global Wine Partners, what we do is we sell wine companies, and I very often encounter the conundrum of the DTC wine brand. The active buyers in the industry are mostly the larger guys. They know wholesale. They understand the necessity of direct, but their real expertise is in wholesale. And so, here's a guy who could sell every single bottle for a very high price direct to consumer and keep all that margin, but he still has 3% of his sales in the wholesale markets. We didn't have a chance because we didn't really have time to talk about why he's doing that or where he's doing that. But I do want to encourage those of you in a direct to consumer model to consider, just a little proof of concept effort in wholesale, whether that's, on premise in towns where you have lots of club members so that they can, go to a restaurant, tell their friends, whatever small effort, just to show that when it's put on the shelf or when it's on a restaurant wine list, people will buy it. So anyway, that's a little editorial. But beyond that, this is a very fun conversation. And Dave is a real happy entrepreneurial warrior. And I think you will very much enjoy this conversation. So listen up. Hello, Small Fortune listeners. Today I have Dave Dalzotto, who is a very successful Napa Valley vintner. He owns not one, not two, but three wineries in the Napa Valley. There's the Dalzotto Estate, there's a Dalzotto, Historic Dalzotto, and then there's, what's the third one, Dave? I forget.
I have Villa del Lago. It's up on Pritchard Hill.
Oh, so you even have more. You have four, if I missed something.
Yeah, probably four, yeah.
Okay, you have a lot of real estate when you lose track of how much real estate you had. Well, Dave, I very much appreciate you joining me today. I think we've met one time. I came into the original St. Helena winery to try to sell you something. And you were very gracious in having me into your office. And I saw the big fancy winery that you had built there south of St. Helena. And I've heard about your success for all these years. And now I have a podcast. So I have an excuse to invite people to talk to me about it. And as you and I have discussed, we are about the wine industry, but we're also about entrepreneurship. So I very often start with entrepreneurship. And in particular, I know that you had come into the wine industry from another successful experience. And we've all been around the valley and the wine business enough to know just because you're successful in one place does not necessarily mean you can be successful in the wine business.
True.
You have been. So I want you to talk to us about what it was that you learned in your first endeavors that translated well to the wine business. But we'll start with, you're a California boy. You're from Modesto. Modesto, yeah. And so tell us about your start, how you got into your first business, and is there entrepreneurship in your family, or how did you get into that?
I started out in the construction business as a drywall contractor. Then I became a builder. And then I realized that you make more money faster by being a real estate agent. So I became a real estate agent. And then I started a real estate brokerage, went through the steps there. And then I was buying a lot of real estate. I realized that I had a lot of knowledge on how to finance things because we had 19% interest rates.
Oh,
people couldn't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
In the 70s, I think in the 70s of 78.
Late 70s and into the 80s. Yeah. So everybody's calling right now about 7%. It's like those of us who are old enough to remember the teens are like, cry me a river.
So I was in a 19% interest rate area. time. And so how do you sell real estate with 19% interest rates? What happened, a gentleman walked into my real estate office, and he was an investor out of San Francisco, and asked me to make offers on properties. And I did. And he bought 100 properties in the Modesto area. And I was writing all the offers. And I noticed one thing about every offer, that there was, he never used a dime of his own money. And so I, of course, took note of that. So I started buying. And within about a few years, I bought about 50 properties. And then I wrote a book on how to do this and how to work within these kind of markets. And we had all these financing techniques. So I was invited by the real estate industry in San Francisco at a convention to give I had a little space on the desk to sell my book. I wrote a book on 101 ways to purchase offers that sellers can't resist, was the name of the book. And in those days, the real estate contract was only one page. So I had 101 of those pages, and I showed people all the different ways to buy a property. And all you had to do is literally photocopy that contract, change the address and the name, and you could present that offer. Because I realized that real estate agents didn't learn how to write a real estate contract to get a license to sell real estate. It was very successful. And then he asked me speaking on the book. So I started giving seminars, and a TV producer was in the front row in San Francisco one time. And he said, "What I just heard, there's a new thing called satellites. They just shot them out and they're creating networks in the sky. They're called infomercials." And I said, "Okay, I'd like to try that." So I taped a television show, and it was a motivational thing along with real estate information. Anyway, 3,000 people showed up at that taping of that show, 3,000 people in Los Angeles. And I played it on cable TV. I bought some time on cable, on SPN Network and USA Cable. Anyway, the show was a big success, and it ran for 7 years. And this became a big deal. So I ended up doing seminars around the United States. I wrote a book for Simon & Schuster in 1990 called How to Make Nothing But Money, which was a bestseller.
That's a great title. Branding is everything, including in publishing, obviously.
Yeah, and it was really cool. Anyway, the show lasted 7 years on cable TV, and I was invited to Las Vegas to give a talk on. I was one of the pioneers of this industry, and it was a billion-dollar industry, infomercials, and it was unbelievable. We're going direct to the public and selling our products direct, and it was a whole new thing. I made a lot of money, and fortunately, but I had a love for real estate. I had a love for wine because I was eating in nice restaurants and they had nice wine lists. So I was here on vacation and I was driving down the road and saw for sale by owner. And I bought my first ranch here on Zinfandel and Highway 29 in Napa, and it had a vineyard. So I had to replant it. I was living in Hawaii, raising my kids in Kona, Hawaii at the time. And then as time went on, I realized how beautiful wine was, how beautiful Napa was. So I got here, after I replanted, I was tasting the grapes, Cabernet, off of my vineyard. And I started a big wine collection in the late 80s. And anyway, so I ended up with a vineyard. And I said, I think I'll start a small winery. So we started with 500 cases. But guess what? I found out the problem was, how do you sell it?
And someone who ought to be able to figure that out based on your background. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing, is that all the distributors control the shelves and they don't let you in. And so I sold my first vintage through Southern Wine and Spirits. And that was the 97 vintage, which was a great vintage. And man, that sold quick. But the 98 vintage came, and they didn't want to buy the 98 vintage.
Yeah, that one got a bad rap for some reason. I don't recall, but it's a long time ago. Yeah, I remember that.
So anyway, because of that, I realized that the distributors controlled the whole business. And if I wanted to build a business out of this, I would have to sell direct to the consumer. I was used to that. because I was one of the pioneers of the infomercial business.
That's it.
Right? So I was going to bring my TV crews. I had my own television crews out of Kona, Hawaii, and I filmed several shows. I was going to bring my TV cameras here and start something like the Kardashian show and teach people about wine and bring in Napa Valley into the picture and build a mailing list. I already had a mailing list of 1 million people off of television. And
I think we can stop right here. I think we have the secret to the success of your winery.
Well,
the secret is start with 1 million person mailing list. Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, well, I love that.
That kind of was. Yeah. So I thought, okay, and this was when the beginning of the internet in the late 80s, when I bought my ranch here in 1988. So I had to sell direct to the people. So I said, okay, then let's create an experience. I knew how people took in information, and thousands of people were showing up. And so I had to learn how to entertain. I had to learn how to make it interesting for people to take in information. My first winery, I leased a building out long-term out on Atlas Peak Road. It's the old winery there on Atlas Peak. And it had
old. That's the one I drive. You still have that, right?
Yeah. We're making wine there now.
Yeah.
Anyway, beautiful. We had old caves. And so I candlelit the caves and I played Italian opera. And when people would come through, I would teach them everything that I knew about wine. And then we started tasting out of the barrel and I created a barrel experience. And what it was is basically a fun thing that people could do beyond standing at a bar. The way everybody did tastings is put a glass out, stand 5 deep at the bar, and then fill your glass up.
Yep.
So I created an experience with a beginning, a middle, and an end so that people would have an experience, they would learn something, and at the end of it, they would go, oh, now I understand really what wine is. And see, my opinion is I think very few people even understand what wine is. They're selling alcohol, and they're not really selling what wine really is, which is a gift from God that is very sacred, and people need wine in their lives to have experiences with their family and friends and to appreciate life. And I think it's a sacred beverage and has been from the beginning. And so I wanted to teach that to people of what are you drinking and how do you feel when you get the euphoria and when you have a family meal with your children and your good friends, and how that wine solidifies that experience and lowers your blood pressure and cleanses your mouth and kills the bacteria in your stomach and lowers your blood pressure and the health and medical benefits of wine as being a sacred product. And because of that experience, I have built a mailing list up of VIPs that support our winery through the mail and through experiences coming to my wineries. And that's why I've been able to build the business is creating an experience. So that's why I had to have beautiful architecture, authentic Italian architecture. I brought over 300 or 400 boxes, 20 to 40 foot containers of marble and stone from Italy. I have an Italian architect to give that experience to people so they understand what wine is.
Yeah. It seems you're selling, I've had this use this reference in a recent interview, selling the sizzle, not the steak. You're selling you're elevating the concept of wine beyond the product. And in doing so, you create a relationship with the consumer that is sticky.
Yes. And because that was the only choice I had is to build the business, 10 people telling 10 people how we built the business. And it's based on relationships and the experience people have had with wine. And we help them, first of all, to understand what it is, what wine is, and how important it is on their daily basis. So now that we see total chaos in the world today, everybody's watching the news and wondering what's going on. You have to come home and have a glass of wine, you know, to lower your blood pressure, right?
I resemble that remark. Yes, I believe that everybody, no matter what team you're on, is going home and having a glass of wine, because this is pretty fraught. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically the beauty of wine. And so when my wineries, we don't talk about fermentation and show you a bunch of tanks and production like the old days. And we try to keep people in small groups, and we try to spend time with them and limit the amount of people at a time that come in so they can get a good experience. And then, of course, at my new wineries, I've added food with that because I thought that was important. Mm-hmm. Because it's not about drinking all day. It's about the experience of the balance and having beautiful food with beautiful wine. And it makes everybody happier at the end of the day. And so because of that, I got the ability to have food paired with wines, which again made the experience here in Napa a little better for people. And so people tell people, and I've never advertised, which is interesting, in for 30 years.
Wow. Wow.
So it's been building. It's like a movement.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see you on the march, because there's a new winery every 7 or 10 years, it seems. So yeah, your success is evident. To what degree you develop these properties de novo? You have real estate background. What are some of the concepts that have worked for you in terms of this, you know, sort of this, the four P's of, or whatever it is, the location, the four L's of real estate, location, or what are some of the aspects that you look for when you're looking for a new site?
Okay. First of all, I think a lot of people lose sight of what the wine business is. And for me, making good wine. In order to make good wine, you have to have very good grapes. That means you got to have the very best places in the valley to make 100-point wine. And that's the premise. You start with that. Because just because you're wealthy and you come in and buy a piece of property, you can't just buy any property and make 100-point wine and sell it for $300 a bottle. It isn't going to happen. And that's what I think a lot of people do. They come in the valley, billionaires, and they go, oh, I'll just buy this property and I'll be able to sell it. And that's not reality. So the premise is find a good location with the wine. And then for me, I wanted something on the highway that tourism could, the people could see the location. And that's why I have two of my main wineries right on the Highway 29. And my idea was to funnel in the people. So you funnel in, you get people coming into your winery, and 10% of those people become VIPs. And those VIPs are the ones that support you year in and year out, so your business can build. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted on the highway. And the old Mondavi thing. He got in a pickup truck, drove down the highway, and turned left so that everybody could see a truck turning left into his winery. And because that was before tourism even started, right? And we're we're the next generation. We have to get people in the door.
Yeah.
So I did it with beautiful architecture on the highway, and that has helped the people coming in.
And I recall that when I visited you that one time on the St. Helena estate, which is on 29 that we're talking about.
Right.
I remember that you had a purpose built, and it seemed to me unusual, although it's becoming more common. You had a purpose built space for limo drivers to hang out.
Yes.
Am I remembering that correctly? What was the idea there?
Yeah, you have a limo room, so the drivers are all stressed out and they don't want to sit in their car all day. Tour, so you make a nice comfortable place where they can have coffee, watch TV, go to the restroom. So that just gives them reason to bring people to my winery.
Yeah, I mean, it creates an incentive. They go, marketing. Where should we go? They say, how about Del Dotto? I can see a man about a horse.
Yeah, that's it. And because of the architecture, it's beautiful surroundings and people are happy there. And if the people have a good time and they like the wine, they tell their driver, that was great. Then he's going to get a good tip because they had a good time.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. And so he'll bring the next group in. And that's the right way to do it, I think.
It seems to have worked for you. There are plenty of ways to make money in the wine business and plenty of ways to lose money in the wine business.
Yes.
Yes, there is. Real. But obviously, what you brought into the industry, the perspective you had as a successful sales guy is obviously part of that. And I think it's interesting because I had a conversation with John Hoflager, who's a consulting winemaker. I don't know if you know him. He was an Alpha Omega. Now he's a consulting winemaker. And so I asked the winemaker the question, what is the key to success? And he says, sales. And here you are a professional salesman and your mantra is the key to success is the product. So
yes. It's funny, huh?
Kind of a
it really does. But so again, how do you continually sell? You can't really sustain a winery if you just sell the product one time. It has to be good where they want to own it and put it in their cellar and collect it.
Correct. Absolutely. And you want them getting a quarterly shipment with no questions asked to just hit the credit card and off you go. You presume you have that business.
Yes. And that's the beauty of Napa Valley. We have a tourism business, which is basically the experience of drinking wine in Napa Valley. Then we have a VIP experience where people can come in and belong to a club. And then you have the wine club, basically, where they get shipments all the time. So these are all aspects of the business. And then you have a little bit of wholesale. I do about only 3% wholesale business because I've never had enough wine to do anything else. So you got to have all the tentacles plugged in and revenue sources from different areas to be able to make the whole thing work as a business. And I've never come into the business wanting to lose money and just because it's fun.
No, I don't think anybody does.
There's a lot of people that do because they have so much money, they don't care. But I've always thought, let's make it work. You just have to figure it out. And these are the things. You have to have multiple revenue sources and you can't have all your eggs in one basket.
Because I see this sometimes in the Valley. I don't know where these people are coming from or going to, but there are lots of very young people wandering around in the Valley on the weekends. What do you see in your tasting rooms?
I do see that. I do see a lot of young people, which is good. And of course, all of our old collectors, they have children and they're being raised drinking your wine. So now they're becoming the new buyers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But I see a lot of the people, the Kardashian, they're on online, the social networks, and they just want to go do the experience and they just want something to do. And they're not real serious buyers. Like in the old days, it was like guys like me filling the cellar. I was building a big wine cellar.
So they're coming for so you built the experience back in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
In order to develop a collector relationship.
That's it.
And now the new generation are more just experience for the experience itself, and they're not collectors per se, and they're on to the next experience. So
yes.
So I guess figuring out how to get them to get serious, really.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what it is. And I call it hats and sundresses. They're coming in, they're young, they have hats and sundresses, and they've seen our show on Netflix that we did with the Kardashians.
Wait a minute. Okay, stop. I just got to stop you. You did a show on Netflix with the Kardashians?
They have one of the episodes where they came into my caves and I gave them a cave tour.
It's so the Kardashians.
Three times, you know, which is fun. We're their favorite winery. And that kind of traffic and social traffic is what brings people in. And so that's what the kids are doing. I don't even know a lot about the social media talking. They're going through the cave. I've got opera playing to the wine. And they're looking at this and then they're going online and then they tell all just want to go see it. So, you know, that it's that kind of stuff. It's the experience.
It sounds like your job for the benefit of the entire industry is to convince the Kardashians to begin collecting wine. What do you think?
Yes.
Don't come for the party. Let's start a cellar.
Yes. And I try to personally point out the medical benefits of drinking wine. I just got a book last year on wine used as medicine. And man, it's an interesting book. For instance, three doctors wrote this out of Australia. And here's a couple highlights. Wine reduces heart attacks by 50% and breast cancer in women by 50%. And it's good for everything in your entire body. And I think the stress levels, as I told you before, reducing stress. I think drinking wine is a health, is health benefits. And I think that needs to be talked about. And that's what I like to talk about when I go in with people.
Right.
Is you need to drink this beverage every day for your health. This has been used for thousands of years. And I know people don't want us to talk about that, but I really think that now you really need it more than ever.
No, I agree. It's time to go on offense a little bit, right? Instead of just sitting in a crouch, letting the other messaging win the day.
Like, for instance, even here where I'm sitting in St. Helena, Dr. Crane came into St. Helena and bought 100 acres to start the wine business here in this area. And why a doctor? Because he was using wine and mixing herbs in with it to create medicines. And that's how the whole wine business started in the United States. From the East Coast. And Dr. Crane was the first one here, and a gentleman in Southern California in the 1858 or something like that. They're the ones that started wine. It was all based on medicine, the health benefits.
Amazing.
And you can trace that all the way back through South Africa. So this is the origin of wine, is health benefits of it.
And right.
I drink wine every day, and I have good blood work right now. I'm 73 right now. But I just feel that people need to be more educated on what this beverage is. And see, because they're trashing alcohol out here and saying, oh, you shouldn't drink alcohol. And that's what the kids are learning. But that shouldn't be the message. We should be teaching them wine has been here for thousands of years, and it's something you need in your life every day. That's why you want to have a wine collection.
That is perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Okay. Thank you for coming. And what a pitch man you are.
Oh,
and you're a pitch man for our great industry. And I don't think anyone's going to listen to this interview and have any doubt about how and why you're so successful.
Well,
in
thanks,
the industry.
Carol. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for everything.
Hi, Small Fortune listeners. If you found this episode enjoyable, we'd really love to have you as a follower. And we're on almost all of your favorite podcast platforms. So if you could take a moment and subscribe or follow, we'd really appreciate it. Also, if you have any questions for Carol, please email us at smallfortunepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks.
I have to say that your internet connection was a little bit glitchy, but so that there may be little places where a word is going to be lost here or there, but the meaning isn't going to be lost. I would have stopped it if it was going to be problematic in that regard, but we were on a roll and you're a busy guy. So I said,
okay,
let's just keep talking. If you want us to provide you with the recording before we publish, we'd be happy to do that.
It's up to you. It's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I trust you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, sometimes I do these interviews and it's, you know, if somebody is not a natural raconteur, shall we say, it can be it's challenging to put together a cohesive, interesting half hour. But yeah, I figured that wouldn't be the case with you, and I was right.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm probably taught too much.
Nah, you were great.
Staying in a podcast.
That was great.
Staying up talking too much.
No, you're really good.
That's really great.
Very much appreciate your time. And
my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Come and have a drink with us anytime.